Good morning, everyone. Let's begin with a prayer. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, our beloved Guru Deva, Paramahansa Yoganandaji, saints of all religions, our friend and guide, Swami Kriyananda, we humbly bow before you all. Divine Mother, great masters, help us to attune ourselves ever more perfectly to your divine presence within. Help us to remember always to lift our consciousness in an ongoing effort to joyfully join our consciousness with Thee. Help us to live in our hearts and to know and trust your inner guidance. We will reason, and we will act. But guide thou our reason, will, and activity to the highest good for all. Om, peace. Amen. Just a little under a week ago now, we had a several hour, wasn't quite an event, but I'll call it an event here at the church, a period of questions and answers. Questions were coming in from many places in the world, and I was doing my best to tune into the answers for those questions that I had not seen ahead of time. The questions were really touchingly remarkable. They were deep. I could feel this sincerity in every question. And with each answer, I don't know this to be true, but I'm pretty sure that the first answer was about 20 minutes. I don't think that's what anybody expected, including me, but that's what came. And I realized later that every one of those questions could be answered expansively. Every question just kept bringing us back to the heart and soul of our individual spiritual paths. And they became food for these 30-minute talks in my mind. One of the questions was a question that's so often asked that I know myself I ask all the time. How do we know for sure the difference? I forget exactly how the question was asked, but it was between intuition and something that had to do with sorting out questions and answers in our mind. It wasn't worded exactly like that, but it's a big question. And as I said then, and I won't spend a lot of time with it now, I've heard Swami Kriyananda so many times speak so respectfully about how difficult this can be. What a great job the ego can do of fooling us, that of how much our emotions can so subtly at times, or in this game of light and dark, of maya, of delusion, really do its job so well and convince us that what we want to be true, not even knowing consciously that we want it to be true, is true. I was listening to a talk just last week, not in relation to that Q&A, but just listening to the way I do. I try every day to listen to a talk that Swami Kriyananda has given. I don't always make it, but I try. And he literally said in this talk, when he was talking, that it wasn't about intuition, but something about intuition came up. He said, I myself can hold it. He didn't even say just with respect, and I can't quote him exactly, but he said, he used the word, it can frighten me. That's what he said. And what he meant was that people would believe more that everything he said, he was saying in any moment, was coming from a place of pure intuition, when in that moment, he might not even be so sure himself. And he's gone on many times to talk about, how do we know? How do we keep approximating that? And I hope to be able to get back and share some of his wisdom with you. Just as I've been sitting here this morning, two experiences that I've had in my life came to mind. One was when I was in either my first or second year of medical school. So that was 1979 and 1980. You know, computers were just coming onto the scene in a big way. There had been computers, but it was just nothing like it is now. Just in these 40 years, so much has happened. And I was a little older than most people in medical school, but I don't think that was what was most important. I think what was most important was that, or meaningful, in ways that I wasn't totally cerebrating yet, if you will, I was deeply and truly on a spiritual path. I was hungry to be tuning in more to my own intuitive process, which actually intuition never really winds up being our own by definition. Intuition means attuning to that superconscious state from which we've all been made manifest. So it's really losing ourselves that we find our true self. So again, it wasn't actually about me, but it was about me knowing that there was something not just larger than me, but more meaningful than everything that was being taught to us. And again, I have to keep being very clear here. I love scientific knowledge. I was thrilled with everything I was learning in medical school. From basic sciences on, it's exciting. You can wrap your mind around it, so it's satisfying in a way that, okay, I got that. I have that. It's different than trying to tune into intuition. It has a very different feel. So this is not a criticism of the knowledge that these professors were trying to give us. But one day I found myself in a discussion with a couple of my professors, and I was saying to them as we were on the computer, all of this knowledge that you're teaching us, all of these facts, huge, huge funds of knowledge, it's all right in this machine. It's all stored in the computer. Why are we spending all of these years memorizing it and then taking all of these ridiculously hard exams when I could just sit here and ask this machine that question 10 years from now when I probably won't remember it anyway? And I said to them, why aren't we being helped more to learn to tune into those things that the computer can't learn. And they just looked at me and treated me as if I was a fool. And, you know, we come in this life, the soul chooses the family, the situation, the body very carefully. It's exactly the perfect situation for all of the spiritual lessons that we need to learn. It's not haphazard. So it's not a mistake. But from the minute we come in, people around us, everything around us, people, teachers, billboards, everything, try to teach us that they know better than we do. They literally, you know, young children have very good intuition. Many of them remember past lives explicitly, clearly, and they're just dismissed, made fun of, just like those professors did with me. Oh, you fool, don't you see what's in front of you? We're moving into the age of knowledge and computers and science, and you need to know all of this. And I was saying, I think I need to know how to find the answer, but I don't have to memorize all of this. But anyway, what I started to say is, we're taught very early to depend on people who presumably know more than we do. And we believe them. And when you're in your first year of medical school, it's very easy to tell yourself, they know better than I do about everything. Much of the time, that was not true. I said a lot of that scientific knowledge came in the first and second year of medical school, really the first year, because by the time I was doing clinical work, it really started becoming clear to me that there was a source of knowledge that I could begin to tune into that knew much more than anybody who was teaching me. But it took a while to get there. When I was 16 years old, I went to my mother and very earnestly, I felt it, I remember it. This is so, it's interesting the way these things happen. I remember the porch I was standing on when I told her that I really wanted to be a doctor. And the feeling that I had was that I needed to be a doctor. And my mother, she made fun of me. She basically said to me, her words, oh, honey, you could never become a doctor, meaning you're not smart enough. It's not for you. Now I know, speaking from her own fear, she was an extremely, extremely bright woman, but she never met her own goals. And she just projected that onto me and just said to me, you can never do that. She goes, why don't you try and become a nurse, which I did, which was wonderful for 14 years until I was stopped in my tracks by a visit from Paramahansa Yogananda, who told me to go to medical school. Now, I've told that story many times, and it's not the part of the story that I want to tell now, though it's very tempting because it's luscious, just a delicious story. But what was important about that was that I knew that at age 16. I knew it. I remember the feeling. But we are trained, everything in us, from the moment of inception, really, when we've all heard this so much, but we've heard it so much because it's so terribly meaningful. It's the essence of the spiritual path. How do we get back on it? How do we make progress? How do we begin to know and trust our own intuition? How do we know when it's true intuition and when it's not? That soul identifies with the body. And what happens then? This soul, which is part of all there is, infinite consciousness, limits itself to this one little body, to an infinitesimal fraction of what it's capable of knowing, because it's capable of knowing everything. Everything, every bit of knowledge, of feeling, of devotion, everything is in existence. We come in and we say, I can only look and know the tiniest piece of this. And this is a sort of not so nice game that's being played with us, because who knows why? I can't answer that question. Because God would like to have us as part of his game. He wants to play with us. I don't really know the answer, but here we are. That's not actually a terribly meaningful question to ask in my mind. The more meaningful question is, how do I get out of here? How do I go from this little place that even these brilliant professors at one of the world's best medical schools is looking at me and saying, nah, you don't need to know that. What are you talking about? How can we? Because I said to them, shouldn't we be learning more how to feel what people are feeling, how to know what they're feeling, how to listen to them? Why are we not being taught about how to be with another soul? I didn't use those words, but it was the question. No, that's not what you want to know. My mother, oh, honey, you can't do that. And we listen. We just do that. I believed my mother. I went on. I became a nurse. I believed that professor for a while. But none of it's true. It was never true. There is only truth eternal, Sanatan Dharma. And this soul identified with the body begins its journey, or picks up where it left off in the last life, towards developing intuition, towards plugging in to what is truth. That was the very first time we hear this lesson, before the Bhagavad Gita, still in the Mahabharata, when Krishna wakes up and he's there with Arjuna and Duryodhana, but he sees Arjuna at his feet and he says, you get first pick. Do you want me or do you want my army? And Arjuna says, I want you, Lord. What was he saying? I want truth. I want wisdom. I want Sanatan Dharma, infinite knowledge. And Krishna says, I'm not going to fight with you. You have to do this. And Arjuna knows from some deep place within himself, yes, that is what I want. That's what we come in wanting. That's what we need to begin to quit paying as much attention to everything that pulls us out, even though we've been taught just in this life from the time we're little to listen. And when we don't listen, what happens? We get yelled at, and then we think, that's how truth comes. We don't even think it. You see, we're taught in all these ways. Nobody ever says to us, when God wants to speak to you, he will come to you as a whisper. You may not recognize it at first. Even St. Francis didn't. God came to Francis and said, Francis, rebuild my church. This is as Francis was turning his attention. He had been called, he knew. But here was this life of luxury, material luxury, parties, everything he had been taught to love, still a part of him for our sake. Francis was a saint, but all of these lessons, nonetheless important to us, still partly drawn to that material world. So when he hears the voice sitting in this little humble church that's in very poor repair. Saint Francis, rebuild my church. Francis does that. He literally starts going out. He collects stones. He collects wood. He collects fabrics right from his father's store. He gets himself in big trouble until he learns over time. He begins to see that's not what God meant for Saint Francis. He didn't really mean start building the building. That's not what God has in store for us. We are all like Francis. We are Jesus Christ. We are Paramahansa Yogananda. We are Krishna. They all come. They all keep telling us that. So Francis had to pray more, pray harder, meditate more, so that he could hear the whisper of what God was actually asking of him. This is what Paramahansa Yogananda tells us when he writes a whole book for us called Whispers from Eternity. Whispers. He doesn't say, I'm going to shout at you like your parents did. Do this. Don't do that. Not that. You're not being good. No. He'll come to us in a moment. And if we listen, we see the way we're supposed to go, the direction. And even if we're trying to listen, and this is where the answer starts to come. How do we know? How do we do this? What did Francis do? He didn't think, that's silly. That doesn't make any sense. I really think I'm trying to find God. He heard it. And so he starts building. He puts out energy. He's willing. He follows what he can hear. And as he's doing that, in the very act of that willingness, that offering, that putting out energy, literally, we hand God the energy with which he can keep working with us to draw us back. If we step onto the path, we may not be great at knowing what does in true intuition feel like, because most of us just disregard it often, like I did when I was 16. There's my mother telling me, okay, that wasn't true. That wasn't it. I remember years ago, I had a very, very dear friend. I still have this dear friend. And he was, I'll just say, behaving in a way in the world that the world wasn't going to see as being perfect behavior. There was a lot to the story. This is a very good soul. But he said to me one day, he said, one of my children is very intuitive. And if she asks me or confronts me with the truth about this, I'm going to reveal the truth. I never want to teach her that her intuition is off. That was so beautiful to me. I'll sacrifice my shame, my whatever, all of what it was. I'll sacrifice because I don't ever want to teach my child that her intuition is off. That's what God does to us. We start following, we reach, I will, reason, act, guide thou. An intuition comes, or what we think is an intuition. Feels like God's talking to me. The one way that we can constantly go astray is if our feelings, our emotions get in the way. As soon as we notice that we have any need, desire for anything in our lives, anything, to go a certain way, it is like a big red light. Tell yourself right away, we cannot receive intuition. Intuition is not of a personal desire. It's not of the ego. It's not about any of our likes and dislikes. Intuition is a pure soul quality. It's God-directed. It's right attitude. It's dharmic, always. That's what intuition is. We have this difficult task of getting our feelings, any all that part of us. We're all so smart. We've been trained to think we know a lot. We have to let all of that be aside. This is like what Yogananda said to the devotee. He went to hand her a rose. She said, I wanted a pink rose, not a red rose. What I give, he said to her very seriously, you take. This is God knowing what we need. This is God coming and saying, Shanti, you have to go to medical school. And furthermore, make it an Ivy League school. I had no idea what that meant. None. I wasn't asking God for the answer in those days. But of course that was the truth. Of course it was right. And by God's grace, I listened and I applied to Ivy League schools. And that's where I was going. I remember when my husband said to me, don't you want to apply to some safe school? Everybody did that with graduate schools. I don't need a safe school. I heard this and I know for sure that's right. So we have to ask ourselves, did that thought, that intuition come aside from any of our needs, our own likes, dislikes? Did it come with the kind of clarity that we just know in the moment beyond the doubt that it's true? Was it cloudy or murky or questioning? If it's that, it's not intuition. And if we're not sure, what do we do next? Well, we essentially fill out the applications for medical school. If we're accepted, we take our next step. That was probably truth that I was hearing. Probably won't be medical school for most of you. But whatever it is, a job, a relationship, a choice about a spiritual path, something about your children that feels deeply important to you, everything, give everything to God. You guide me. Let me feel the answer so that I know that it's coming from you. If you have doubt, take a baby step forward. Don't dive into it. Don't give every penny of your life savings. Don't make a turn that you can't come back from. Why would we do that? We are human beings making our way back to God. No arrogance here. Little step, how am I doing here, Lord? Am I still on the right track? Find people that you trust on the path. Find people who have been praying, meditating deeply for years. Ask them, what do you think about this? Does this feel like intuition? Always. The answers can come to us with the greatest clarity. We ask the question as we go into meditation. We meditate, which means bringing ourselves as far into our very center, our astral spine, the sushumna, as we can, offering it up, ask the question from there, and then we sit and we listen for the answer. The more we do this with great sincerity, the more we pay attention to, was that real intuition or was it ego? Was it my soul speaking? Was it my desire speaking? Pay attention so that we begin to know what it feels like when God is truly, when we are opening for the answer, willing, reasoning, acting, but truly being open for that guidance, and you begin to know, this is a true intuition. This I'm not sure about. Maybe it's still my opinion. Humility, willingness, energy, heart, divine love, all offered up and saying, I am your child. Now I want you, whisper, show me the way.